Born at Sea, raised on radio, and now back on the high seas. John, welcome back to Out of the Main.
Thank you. Good to be back.
Uh-huh. Well, let's see how well you can hit your high seas. Ready? Go for it. Not very good. Thankfully, we have some professionals on board today, both of whom could probably hit high C above C. We'll find. We're not going to challenge them to it, but we want to welcome back onto the podcast Kevin and Aaron of the Docksiders. Guys, welcome back.
Hi, guys.
Hi there. Thanks for having us back.
It's been a couple years, or it's been a minute, as the cool kids would say on the internet.
Aaron is very happy to be back.
Yeah, last time we were, you were in or hailed from Milwaukee. Now you hail from Vegas, huh?
We have planted anchor. Sorry, the pun.
I think it's dropped anchor, though, if you're going to say it.
But the ship's run into a barge in the desert.
Already.
You let us handle the puns.
All right.
So I just wanted, what's so cool about this, it's so good to see you again, sort of in person, but I was thinking back to the first time I did see you in person, which was a few years ago, maybe 3 years ago. John and I are at a concert at this beautiful outdoor waterfront venue, watching what has become my favorite yacht rock tribute band. I believe they are America's favorite yacht rock tribute band. And not long after that, you're on this podcast and you're talking about heading out to Vegas, which we'll get an update on. And now here we are a couple years later, and the two of you are collaborating with my co-host and brother here on a new record. So let's start right maybe at the end and work our way backwards. The album is currently out. Tell us a little bit about it.
Well, you know, it would have been a dream project if I didn't have such a demanding co-producer in Nixon. He made the project just almost unbearable at times.
Is that why it's called The Timeless Journey?
You know what I'm talking about as his brother, Tom? No.
Well, you called it The Timeless Journey. I would have called it The Endless Trudge.
Yes.
But close enough. Yeah.
Good. No, honestly, it was a dream project, you know, working with John was just, it's so funny because, you know, we met you guys 3 years ago, like you said, and didn't know you guys personally and didn't know truly your feelings about, you know, purity in yacht rock. And we are, you know, we've talked about this before. We are rooted in yacht rock, but because we have this incredible singer and my wife in the band and the reality of there not being tons of female yacht rock songs, we've had to get creative in ways to pull in some more soft rock hits of those eras. And we have found that our audiences just want to feel good and be happy. And that's what this music does to us musicians and students of this music from that era. But to the people that this was the soundtrack of their lives to, this just really is healing. It's therapeutic. And we feel that, you know, by doing that, it allows us to kind of touch more people, not just the yacht rock pure fans. So, when we met you guys, we were really, pleasantly surprised into how open you were. And then listening to the Page 99 stuff and all the cool music that is coming out of your neck of the woods, I just had this instinct, and I reached out to John and I said, hey, I think we're going to do a Docksiders album. How would you like to kind of split the production duties? And we could find our, and I think we found a really natural way of, you know, John had his lane, I had my lane. It was both very collaborative on both sides of that. And we were very communicative about where we were on certain songs, and he would go into his studio and create tracks, and then I would get them, and then we would talk about another song, and then he'd go back and work on others, and then I'd get them, and we'd start adding vocals and guitars and saxophones, and it was just a really I'm sorry I'm rambling, but I'm so happy about
take a breath
pleasurable project for me. And I've made some records in my life, as I know you guys have too. So I think people will hear the joy that we had making it when listening to it. I really think it translates that way.
Yeah, it was interesting to do because, like you said, you had your lane, I had mine. So it meant I didn't have to be stressed about the stuff that's tedious to me, which is recording vocals. And you didn't have to stress about how do I start these songs from the ground up. That was, you know, for me to do. But the, one of the more interesting parts of that, which I think we'll probably be bouncing around a little bit, but the song selection process was an interesting thing because it kind of came in waves. But at one point, because I wanted to bring Erin in on this, I don't think you mentioned how great of a singer she is, but not many people are willing to take on Streisand. I can't think of a lot of people that are willing to cover Streisand. So I know you kind of forced this on her, Kevin, but I want to hear Erin's take on what was it like to go in and say, okay, I've agreed to cover Streisand. Here we go. Take one and hit it. What was going through your head?
You know, what's crazy is I didn't really think about trying to make something that was hers. I wanted to make, I loved the song and I just wanted to sing it. And I didn't think about like, oh, people are going to compare this to Barbara. I really didn't think about it because if I had, I think it would have been even harder for me to sing it. Because it was, you know, it's a high song. It's really, it's up there and it's got a lot of power behind it. So I just really, I looked at him because he had wanted to do it a certain day. And I was like, I didn't get enough sleep last night. I know it's going to affect my performance. You're going to have to give me another day. And he was like, oh, okay, fine. But then, you know, I got in and I said, okay, I think I'm vocally ready for it because it's a strong song that has a huge range. You know, it's not just, it's quiet and then it's very powerful and then
it's very dynamic.
Yeah. That's the word, dynamic. Thank you.
That's okay. I'm here for you. Love you.
I was just going to say, as a listener, it comes across as near effortless, and I know it's not effortless, but it's a testament to your technique and your ability. Listener Mead, who is a friend to the podcast, posted on Facebook something to the effect of, if you are going to take on Babs, you better bring your A game. And I'm here to tell you, you brought your A game, Erin. And I'm also hearing shadows of another one of your mentors, Olivia Newton-John, in your approach to that same song.
It's crazy because that's kind of always the way I have sung, and I didn't recognize it as being similar to Olivia until people started saying it. I've always had that sort of, like when I met him, we talked about like my singing style and I had this ability to be very quiet and kind of whispery.
Airy, very breathy. And
he always tried to pull that out of me because I loved it. And I didn't realize how much there's a similarity to Olivia there. But
and then, you know, by no fault of her own, when you start throwing Olivia songs in the set and you listen to her do Olivia, it's like, holy God. Like, I don't remember who else, but somebody just recently said nobody does Olivia like Erin Zucker. Somebody on our social media. And I totally agree. Like, I can close my eyes nightly on stage and it's like amazing. I don't know if I shared this with you, but I worked with Olivia at one point in time and I played her a version of Erin singing Magic. And she was so sweet. She said, honey, I have heard a lot of people sing my music. Your wife is very special.
Yeah.
Talk through you guys, if you don't mind. So as John initially told me that he was going to pursue this project with you, he said, we want to cover some artists from the Yacht Rock era or within or without. It doesn't really matter that much. But it was to try to find what we call the buried treasures. Now, obviously, Woman in Love was a hit. But what was the approach to finding and selecting the songs that you were going to cover for this album?
If I'm mistaken, please correct me. But Tom, you were part of the playlist that you and John both put together for me to start digesting.
Yep. None of my songs made the cut, though.
Are you serious? None of them?
They were all Pearl Jam songs.
Album's not closed yet. We can still release something next week.
Oh, Okay, good, 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 good.
The first song we did was Making Love. Finding that first song kind of sets the tone of stylistically where we're hoping to go, but
because it allowed us to figure out that we were going to do something that wasn't exactly yacht rock. We were going to go not adjacent, but a tangent to it, I guess you might say, because there was a lot of synth bass and drum machine and stuff in that song. It was much more of a mid 80s to even later 80s sound, but from my perspective, it allowed me to pull out all my toys, but it also got me to figure out, okay, how far is he willing to go outside of playing it safe as an organic yacht rock band? And that one gave us our parameters because we knew we could do the safe stuff, but I wanted to do something synthy like that. And it was
for people who don't know it or haven't heard it yet. Who is the original artist that you're covering? Making Love.
Finis Henderson
is off the same album as Blame It on the Night.
82, yeah. Correct?
It's right in the yacht rock pocket or the yacht pocket.
Yeah.
Along the way, I heard stories that there were some very interesting external forces that came into play in terms of hearing what you were doing and maybe having an influence on the direction you might take it. Names like Tony Orlando?
Yeah, so Tony is, I love Tony Orlando. He's the reason we're in Las Vegas. He has been so instrumental in the Docksiders day to day for the last, I don't know, 2-3 years now. He's now retired from performing after 64 years in show business. And he just said to me a couple days ago, let me get a little relaxation and then I'm going to be managing you. So I couldn't be more excited than to have the legend that is Tony Orlando and be present in our lives, more so personally than professionally. He is, there's nobody that I've ever met in the music business that is as amazing as this man. Over $200 million raised with Yellow Ribbon for veterans and veteran causes since it came out in 1973. The man is literally an angel on earth, and he leads with love, and it has really taught me a lot. And I only hope that I can follow in his footsteps someday, helping others out the way that he has helped the Docksiders. That is one of my biggest dreams. But Tony, I was sending him some of the rough mixes as we were doing some stuff, and he sent me a text message with an MP3 attached to it with the David Pack song, I Just Can't Let Go. Now, David and Tony are very, very dear friends. And he actually said, he's like, you and Aaron should do this as a duet. Now, for those listeners of yours that don't know, Tony Orlando was the head of publishing for Columbia Records back in the early 70s for Clive Davis. Tony signed Barry Manilow. Tony signed James Taylor. Tony was instrumental in, the songs are escaping me, but the songs that he placed with artists that are iconic classic songs are mind blowing. And Tony, using his ears and instinct, coming to me saying, you guys need to do this song, was like, okay, we're going to do it. Like, it's a no brainer. And I didn't know how I felt about the duet until I sat down with Aaron and we looked at the lyrics and we said, okay, this would be your verse and this could be my verse. And then we can split the bridge section in two. And it really lends itself beautifully, I think, to the message of what the lyric is as a duet. Tony, after it was recorded, kept insisting I reach out to David Pack, and I have not met the man. I've been a huge fan. One of Aaron's favorite voices on the planet, mine as well. And he sent me David's phone number and he said, please. He probably asked me like 3 or 4 times. I was like, I'm going to some annoying idiot that's just saying, here's yours, you know, what do you think? And he just said, no, he's going to want to hear it. He's like, it's really good. Like, please send it to him and tell him that I told you to reach out. So I did. I sent it to him and I got an absolutely beautiful text back where he was unbelievably complimentary. He said, congratulations to everybody that played on the record and congratulations. The singers are great. And then he wrote a second comment after that one that said, your wife has an amazingly beautiful voice. Wow. Right? Wake me up. Like, really? Is this really amazing? So it feels amazing. I'm just very grateful. Like, I'm grateful to have met you both. I'm grateful for the work that John put in and you, Tom, and helping select these songs. And Aaron, you know, even though I kind of, every time we'd get on the phone and I'd be like, yeah, I got to kind of give my wife like 6 days of advance notice when I want to get her in the studio. And nobody would know this unless I said it. She sang Woman in Love twice. And it's the whole second take that is on the record.
Wow.
There's no comp in that.
Oh, wow.
At all. That is that. And I have been a part of some really cool recording sessions where a singer steps behind a microphone. And, you know, it's very infrequent that a singer can sing a song from top to tails straight through without having to stop or fix or rephrasing, or the timing might be a little off, or the emotion, you know, and then you kind of look to try to like create emotional connection between take one and take five, or take, you know what I mean? You can make a comp that doesn't sound like it's schizophrenic from a performance standpoint. So when you can get a singer that has an instrument like that, that really kind of digs in. And I think, you know, specifically about Woman in Love, we had done that song once. It was our second show that we had ever played as the Docksiders in 2018. There weren't a lot of people. We were still trying to figure out what we were going to be. We didn't want to wear all captain's outfits, and we didn't want to do the, you know, kind of the kitschy, shticky thing. Not, like, we do the shticky thing with sequins and the glitter, but I think that's what makes Las Vegas, and it was a natural thing from that perspective. But when she did Woman in Love that night in this room, there probably was 30 people there. When I mean to tell you, they wouldn't let us start the next song for an abnormal amount of time. It was 30 people that would not stop screaming. And I said to her, I'm like, we have to figure out how to somehow, that song's got to have some life.
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy. Woo! And sadness. Oh. And anger. Definitely some disgust.
Rose!
And I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
I had to touch on one more song while we're talking about song selection. I don't know that we're obviously going to go through all of them, but it was an interesting story because after we had done the first few songs, Making Love in particular, kind of, as I said, sort of set a tone, at least in my mind. In my list and in the back of my mind, I had put a song and I kept kind of pushing it to the top to see if I would get a reaction. Never got a reaction. Finally, we're near the end. We're still searching for songs. And you reach out to me and say, what about Let's Hear It for the Boy?
Got much to say, but he loves me, loves me, loves me. I know that he loves me anyway.
And I had been wanting to do that one in the back of my mind, as I said, for months. Lo and behold, obviously, I say yes. And then you tell me, well, there's an actual interesting story behind that that relates directly to Aaron. So, Aaron, tell us that backstory.
Well, what's funny is there had been a different song that was picked for me, and it didn't resonate with me.
Do you remember the name of the song that we were going to record?
Yes, it was from J.P. Morgan. It was Keeping It to Myself.
That's exactly. Yeah. And every time I would say, hey, we're going to record that song, she would be like, ugh.
I just, like,
she was worried she was going to get gonged.
I just listened to it and I didn't feel it. And it just, like, I didn't love it. And I kept going, okay, this is going to be one of those, like, I have to trudge through it. And then he said to me,
honestly, I got a little frustrated.
He did. And rightfully so.
And we were trying to finish the album, and right. We were like one song away from being done with her. And I just went, we're just going to pick another song because clearly you're not into it and you don't want to record it. So I'm not going to push you anymore.
So then he started going through the songs, and then it must have been like, he must have realized subconsciously that you had picked this one before because he played it. And I was like, he's like,
well, I went back to the list and I think that's where it hit me that she had a connection to the song. Yeah. I hadn't thought of it.
I think we were worried it wasn't yachty enough. It was too far off. Yeah, right. Off base. But right. There was a tie-in.
This was a song that my mom would hold my little brother, sing to him and dance around the living room. And it has this very like happy childhood memory song for me. When he said it, I was like, yes, that's the one. This is the one we're going to do.
Well, speaking of being a child and interesting song selections, so I am the proud flannel-wearing ripped jeans grunger in the crowd. And John one day tells me, oh, yeah, Kevin talked to Butch Vig the other day, and Butch Vig had an opinion about it. I'm like, what? So explain this one.
Dave Grohl's related to the story, too.
And for people who don't know who Butch Vig is, just explain real quickly who Butch Vig is for people who don't know.
I mean, Butch Vig is the Jedi master of 90s rock, right? Like, he's
90s alternative rock.
Yeah. I mean, Nirvana, Nevermind.
Smashing Pumpkins.
I mean, the list goes. He's in the band Garbage. We were on tour, mm-hmm. and we stumbled upon one of our other yacht rock bands that you guys, I'm sure, know who they are. And Butch, Dave Grohl was talking indirectly to them. And he said, hey, I'm a huge fan of the AM Gold sound. You know, if I was going to do an Andrew Gold song, I wouldn't do Oh, What a Lonely Boy. I would do Never Let Her Slip Away. That's the gem. So me being me, I was like, we're doing that song.
I talked to my baby on the telephone long distance. I never would have guessed I could miss someone so bad. Yeah. I really only met about a week ago, but it doesn't seem to matter to my heart.
So what I did is I reached out to Butch, actually Clay, our sax player, who's from the Madison area as well, and played in many bands with Butch over years, like grew up, you know, playing music together. Clay sent him the track and said, would you be interested in producing? I said, can you please ask him if he'll produce it? And let's see if we could maybe get Dave to guest on the record. And Butch responded immediately, just didn't feel it was right. Timing didn't feel right. And it didn't dissuade us. Like, we still went ahead, and I think we killed that. And Danny Williams, our Docksider that sang it, just, it's one of my favorite performances on our record.
Yeah, it's fantastic. So John says that there's a story behind the final track, because I'm listening to the album nonstop since it came out. By the way, it is available for streaming and download, vinyl to come, which we'll ask you about. But I hear the song at the end, and I'm like, it sounds familiar, but I can't place this tune. But it's buried at the back of the record. It is a gem. It's going to be my buried treasure for this episode. Tell us the story about Wish You Were Mine.
Wish You Were Mine is why Aaron and I are sitting here in Las Vegas. It was Thanksgiving night 2019, right before the pandemic happened in February or March of 2020. I got an email at 3 a.m. and the email said something like, I'm the oldest living hit songwriter in the world with hits in over 10 countries. Google me. I'd love to talk to you. Here's my number. I wake up the day after Thanksgiving and it's signed L. Russell Brown. And the name was very familiar. I couldn't at that moment place where I knew L. Russell Brown from. But when I hit Google, he wrote Tie Yellow Ribbon Around the Old Oak Tree. He wrote Knock Three Times. He wrote Come on, Mary Ann for Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons. He was Bob Crew's protege back in the day in the Brill Building, was writing with Carole King and just Simon and Garfunkel. He was writing with all the greats. And I called him the next day. I said, oh my gosh, I'm honored. And he said, we heard a version that you did of an Andy Gibbs song that you posted on YouTube. I went on a deep dive. And here on the right-hand column is this, the Docsiders, I Just Want to Be Your Everything, which is our most streamed video on YouTube. And he said, the vocal is great. He was like, the mix is incredible and the production is better than the original. And to me, I'm going, he might be old, might be getting hard of hearing. I don't know what the deal is. But he said, we talked and then he said, I got this song that I wrote for the Bee Gees in 77. Would you like to do it with the Docsiders? And I said, are you kidding me? I'd be honored to. So he sent me this track. I sent it to John when we brought the song back up again. And when we got to the end of this record, it really felt important to me to pay a tribute to Larry Brown. Larry's the one who introduced me to Tony Orlando. And Larry is, at 81 years old, Larry got on a plane and he came out for our last opening here. And I love him. And it's just been an honor to get to know him. And I literally sent it to John. I said, it's kind of quirky. It's got some measures of 6/4 and then it goes to 4/4, but it feels like it like skips to me. It doesn't really feel like a pop song necessarily would in that era.
For the Bee Gees.
Right.
Yeah. He had written it for the Bee Gees. And since the Bee Gees were writing their own stuff, they were like, thank you, but no.
Mm-hmm.
So it just sat.
Yeah. It was a puzzle to figure out. But once we figured it out, then the song just kind of flowed easily from there.
Well, I got to tell you guys, you are probably the hardest working couple in show business these days. You're like Tony Orlando and Dawn from 1977.
All in one.
Yeah. So
we got to be honest. We went and saw Springsteen a couple years ago and we watched he and his wife up there. And I looked at her and I said, I think we can take you to
it. Yeah. Probably.
Yes.
Although the boss is in great shape.
Yes. Ladder match. I want to see that.
Well, what else is going on? So before we let you go, we want to make sure everyone knows what is going on. Tell us about the vinyl release. Tell us about what's happening in Vegas these days and what you got coming up this summer.
So CDs are in production right now. We should have those hopefully soon. Vinyl takes 3 months from what I've learned. I've never done vinyl before for a project of my own. Back when I was making music and releasing CDs in the 90s, vinyl was, it was gone. Nobody was printing vinyl. And from what I've learned now, ours are being made in Europe. They're shipping to get it back to the States and they're shipping to get it to me. I was told 3 months if we're lucky. So we're just staying in touch with the people that have been supporting. We have an Indiegogo campaign that's running for another 2 weeks. We are looking just for help to pay for the hard costs of making. You know, you got to do a separate master for vinyl. You got to do a separate master for the streaming. The artwork that we had created costs real money. The CD and the lacquer and the vinyl pressing costs real money. You guys know there's hard expenses. There's other expenses that we put our sweat equity in, obviously. And we're not looking to make any profit on that. We're just looking to try to see if we don't have to go into debt any further.
Yeah. But summer is coming, and so you get out there, you get your tour going, you start shaking hands and kissing babies, and you'll sell them, right there on the spot. That's the idea, right?
That's the hope, right? And then we're gonna have to drag them to the live shows, right? They'll be with us whenever we play. Unfortunately, we're not gonna have them we'll have CDs for the summer this year, but we're not gonna have the vinyl at that point. Las Vegas, we are so excited. We moved here two years ago, August. We opened at the Rio, quickly learned that was not the spot for the Docsiders. We played for 8 weeks there and then moved in March of 3 to a place on Fremont Street, quickly learned that was not the place for us as well. And we had always dreamt of being on the Strip. That was the hope of kind of coming to Vegas to have a really big show on the Las Vegas Strip. And a handful of weeks ago in February, there was a producer who was building a room a year and a half in the making, and he had read an article that was praising the Docksiders in Las Vegas. For whatever reason, we have really been embraced by the entertainment community and the people here in Las Vegas. We are we're very grateful for that. And he read this incredible article, came to our show at a room that was just kind of like, we did it to play, really. We didn't
right.
We didn't. It wasn't like a plan to, like, you know, do any more. And Tony and his wife and daughter were at the show. I walked them to their car. I walked Aaron out. And I walked back in, and this journalist introduced me to this producer who said, I'm building a room. I want the Docksiders to be my headliner. It's in the Venetian.
Oh. And
I went. It was so hard for me not. I had to pull on all of my poker skills.
Interesting. Go, interesting, like, proposition.
I was like, just the Venetian? I don't know if I like the Venetian.
Yeah. Probably talk not to the my right people. Place. Yeah.
But I mean, come on. It is, in my opinion, it's the premier property on the Las Vegas Strip. It's the right age and the right demographic. It's not catering to, you know, just Californians that are coming in for weekenders. It's the place to be. And we celebrated for all of like 6.5 minutes because then the fear set in of like, holy cow, we got to really put people in the seats now, because if we don't, we're not going to be playing there long. Mm. So,
well, yeah.
The hopes are, you know, that the Yacht Rock phenomenon has touched enough people that age group realizes they don't have to go out and spend, you know, $500 to go to the Sphere to be entertained. Like, you know, they can be equally entertained by coming into a 350-seat showroom at the Venetian for a fraction of that price and leave feeling just as good and have more money to lose at the tables.
There you go.
Right? That's right. Yes.
There
yes.
you go. Well,
well, it was certainly an exciting project to be a part of. We'll see. I'd love to do another one, but even if we don't, this was, you know, totally in my wheelhouse. I want to thank you for he told the story real quick at the beginning that he sent me this nice text outlining. No, you didn't. You sent me a text that said, hey, dude, let's make a record. And then you just left me. That's how it started.
Right, yeah.
But I texted you back right away and I said, yeah, let's talk. So anyway, I had to correct the storyline there. Tom, go ahead.
He did tell me that this is the easiest project that he had, the best project that he has worked on.
It had its challenges. I'm not going to say it didn't. Like,
working with him.
Working with John, working with a co-producer was great. Like, you can be in a co-production relationship, and sometimes it's like egos get in the way and ideas get in the way and I need to be heard. You're not listening to none of that. Like, this was beautiful. And I remember you even calling me and saying, dude, you let me kind of do what I wanted to do. And I was like, I didn't let you do anything. You're co-producing the way I perceive this as we're doing this together. I'm a firm believer of letting talented people do what they do. I've done that in all of my successful collaborative and creative relationships. I find that the contrary, when you're in a room and somebody's inserting muscle into the situation, people tend to kind of like grudgingly and they tense up and you don't get the best out of people. And I really felt in my gut that we were going to make something that hopefully first and foremost that the people would hear, that it would find ears, right? Like, that for whatever reason, that there's just not a lot of new music that people can find because there's just too much saturation of people throwing songs up every single day. So, like, how do you hear it? So it's things like the Yacht Rock groups on social media. You know, I didn't expect anybody to make it a Monday track of the day. And to see that, it's like, you know, and it hasn't happened a ton, but it's happened enough. And Mead is an incredible example of that and how celebratory he is on the music and that group on Facebook. And you guys might want to share that information. But like, It's things like that that hopefully will prolong people being aware of what it is that we spent a lot of time and heart and soul creating.
Well, it's been an amazing journey. The Timeless Journey is now out.
Timeless one, yeah.
It's really been great getting to know you guys. I know John's gotten to know you a little bit better, but it's been fun listening to you, watching you live, seeing the progress, and we wish you nothing but continued success. Keep making the music that we all love, and we'll keep listening and downloading and buying.
Thank you. That'd be fun. Doc Snyder's album 2 due next summer.
Oh, there you go. Oh, all right, geez. We better let you go so you can get on it.
Produced by Butch Vig. Bye.
Yeah. Right. All right, guys. Thank you, and come back soon. Next time there's something to talk about, we'll find an excuse to have you on. All right, so you heard the man, John. Have you worked out all the details with your contract for the Doc Snyder's 2 album yet?
I forwarded the email to Butch.
Out to Butch
Vig. Yeah.
That was an interesting little tie-in. I did not expect Butch Vig to work his way into this, even though he eventually did not.
And still. Dave Grohl. So.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. Wow. Interesting stories, man. There's a lot of little interesting yarns tied up in that album that you guys worked on. So very interesting.
I hope it does really well. I think it will. I think I was listening to it today on headphones. I had to get away from it for a while because I was always hearing the way I had it mixed in my head, and then when I heard their other mixes, they're very different. But putting it on headphones today, it's a smooth ride. It really is.
Smooth ride. Speaking of smooth rides, okay. Should we sail on into the lightning round?
Oh, yeah.
Not so smooth, wasn't
it? Nah, storms are brewing. All right, so why don't I go first on lightning round this time?
All right.
We haven't seen that happen very often, and this ties directly to last week's episode. I told you that... Well, let me reset the scene. You brought up Pete Christlieb's sax solo at the long playout on Steely Dan's FM.
Correct.
And so I had to go and find that version and put it into our edit. And the one that I had that was directly lifted off of the soundtrack had Walter Becker playing guitar lead at the end. I thought, that's kind of weird. And I went back to you and said, well, what version are you talking about? And you sent me a Spotify link to just the decade greatest hits.
That's what it looked like, but it actually wasn't.
Right. So what I did, I did some research, and what I found is that there's actually 4 official versions of that song released.
Whoa.
So there was the one that was on the FM soundtrack, and then there was the 12-inch single, which was the same as the one that was on the main album that had Walter Becker at the end. Then there was a 7-inch version. Of course, it was cut down, shortened. Again, would still have Becker at the end, though it's shortened. The 3rd version out there is the B-side of the 7-inch single had what they called FM reprise, or reprise, depending on how you like to say it. That version was an instrumental and had Pete Christlieb blasting all over it. Then an edit of that was made that took the front end and eschewed the Becker ending, replaced it with the Christlieb ending, and that is the longer 5-minute-plus version that you'll see on like Steely Dan's Gold or Citizen Dan or the compilations thereafter. So there were 4 versions, and we had to do some real heavy sleuthing to really get to the bottom of it, you know?
Yeah, when you first initially said, which version, or what are you talking about? There's only one sax solo in the song. I thought I was losing my mind.
Yeah, like, no kidding.
I literally just heard it 2 days ago.
So all I'm right, glad so I'm that's what I insane. Found at sea. I found the truth at sea. Well,
now that you've heard it in full, don't you agree that's more of a sort of modal style, open freeform jazz solo?
Yeah. He's going outside the chord pattern there, for sure. He is what they call as a jazz soloist. He's redefining the harmony by playing different notes that... Some would call wrong notes when played in a certain way, but when played in another way where the next note that attaches to it and the next note after that all sort of say something, your ear will allow it to go out for a minute, as they call it in jazz, playing outside.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's 2 points for me then.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. All right. Well, all this talk of Doc Siders and yachtiness and covers got me in the tropical state of mind.
Ooh, me too.
It reminded me we had just gotten an email to the viewer mailbag from none other than Bruce Blackman of Starbuck fame.
Yes.
And he sends this. This is our new fun single, Spring Break Shake. And it's the perfect feel-good song for the spring season. Let's hear it.
She say, 1-to-1, I just wanna go have some fun. Party like a bee's a beach in the middle of summer. Let's go, join the crowd, have some fun and make it loud. Drop this bass to the bass and a monster drummer. Let's go make some crazy, act like a piece of God.
All right, there we go. That's some tropical new vibes for you.
New Starbuck. He bills it as a we, which was interesting, not I. So yes, he's got the Starbuck brand all over it.
Yep, yep. He continues to make music. He continues to follow them on the charts, the various charts internationally. Mm-hmm. And it's quite the coda he's having. Mm-hmm. Cool. Or they are having, because it's Starbuck
now.
Yes,
it's a they.
All right. You already heard my buried treasure in the interview with The Sucrose, because it's the last track on your record.
That's true, but I did not drop the audio sample in at that point, because we're going to do it right here, right now. There you go. You can hear where that could have been a Bee Gees song. You know, the odd time signatures that Kevin was talking about in that song reminded me of, if you listen to Guilty, that Barbara Streisand and Barry Gibb did together. There's a lot of odd bars in there, even though the song flows well because of the melody. And this is kind of the same case.
Yeah. And I started to convince myself, the more I liked it, I'm like, I know this song from somewhere, I swear. And I obviously did not. So it's the first time I think that it's seen light of day, right? It's Wish You Were Here?
Mine. Wish You Were Mine. And I think it was imitative of the Bee Gees. And so, therefore, there's a certain familiarity that comes there, I think.
Yep. All right. Cool.
Buried treasure. You were right about the sort of tropic vibes and the cover song theme, which we did not even discuss. But as you know, I recently got back from Jamaica. And while we were there, of course, they love to do a reggae version of any pop song. Any popular song can be made into a reggae song if you just know the proper template. And on its surface, that would sound like it's cheesy or it's shallow or it's just kind of blah, paint by numbers. But man, I started building a song list, just searching Spotify for any of these reggae covers from the 70s and 80s, our era that we like, and just threw them all in a list. And as they play down, it's interesting. It's kind of fun to try to remember hearing it in a different context. It's interesting to try to remember who did it and what the song actually is as it gradually comes to you. But also, I got to cull through the bad ones and find the really good ones. So here's one that applies to this podcast. There is a group called the Moleskins. They had an album in 2010 called Bittersweet, and they mostly do jazzy covers. This one, though, has a reggae vibe to it, and so that's why it was included on some reggae compilations. But here's a reggae pop version of IGY.
On the train, all graphite and glitter, under sea by rain. 90 minutes from New York to Paris will by 76 will be A-OK. What a beautiful world this will be.
Well, yeah, that totally works, and I can see how it would, given the rhythm and everything of the original, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah, they don't really change the tempo or the feel all that much as they replace it with reggae-type instruments, particularly the drums sounds and the reverb, the tinny delays that are so common in reggae music. It's cool.
Well, hey, UB40 made a whole career out of that, so there you go.
Out of three songs.
Yeah, right. All right.
Okay, I guess I have to... do my final thought?
Yep, and you chose who went first, so can't blame me this time.
How did I do this wrong? I don't know. Anyway,
whoever goes first goes last, just so you want to...
I will remember that next week. Right. Since we've been talking about covers, here's Quincy Jones with Luther Vandross and Gwen Guthrie from 1978, an album called Sounds and Stuff Like That. This is their cover of Doobie Brothers, Taking It to the Streets.
You don't know. You don't know I can in your world.
So is there such thing as gospel yacht? I mean, it's got personnel. It's got Quincy.
I guess.
Doobie Brothers. It's Michael McDonald's song.
Send it in. You'll find out the hard way.
Yeah, I know. Find out what I already know the hard way. Yes. What do you got?
Well, for my final thought, you keep mentioning Yachty covers. And here we are in the week of April 22nd, 2024, which means this past Friday, August Red dropped a new single, which happens to be a cover of a song you recorded in the late 90s by a group that you call Mr. Radio.
Yes, it was my sort of art rock project, ELO, Queen, Pink Floyd-ish sounds. And then you wrote the lyrics on this one. I think I just handed it to you, a completely blank slate with melody. No words. I don't think even starter words.
That's it. That's it. I actually took the title Frozen Wings from a lyric from my prior band, Just Grew, from the 90s. So,
and wasn't that lyric from a Doors tune, sort of?
Yes, loosely? That was taken from some Doors, from Jim Morrison poetry.
Okay.
So I'm going to reveal the entire story, which I already have, actually, on Facebook. So if you want to go look at my personal Facebook, I tell the whole 30-year chronology of how this song came to be.
Yeah.
We decided this year to Yachtify it, and we kind of adapted it to a almost like the Player Baby Come Back type of groove. And so here is the updated Yachtified version of our collaboration under the banner of August Red. This is Frozen Wings.
Let us swear.
No offense to you, to me, to our lead singer, to my daughter who sings backup, but the crown jewel of that song is the guitar lead by Andrea DiPuccio.
Andrea, I wish he would be listening so he could hear you say that, because it's true. That song, man, that rip he plays, woo, fire.
And I keep bragging about it. People probably heard it, and they're like, wow, there's not much to that. And that's exactly right.
Yeah.
It's not a ton of notes. It's just played perfect.
If I were to give you a mix and take it out, and then you'd be like, oh, man, this kind of really falls flat here. It's amazing how much it can add without you necessarily pointing and saying, that's what's making it work. It just does.
Yep.
That's the magic of playing the right part.
Truth. Truth. Well, that is the final word, other than the recent discovery that you made that Spotify is now transcribing our podcasts. And when we get to the end, they tell us what?
Well, you know what we normally say, but they had it transcribed as a horrid play.
There you go, boys and girls. A horrid play. Almost seems too fitting, too on the nose.